Dr. Dutcher, what about bevacizumab right now in a non-protocol setting for renal cell cancer?
Well, bevacizumab has activity, as we saw today in the abstract that Ron presented. The biggest problem with that drug is reimbursement. So we actually do use it off protocol for some individuals, but we have to get financial clearance to be able to utilize it because of the expense.
If these drugs were all equally available, say the CCI and bevacizumab, would you use that in preference to another TKI inhibitor in this point? In other words, if you were sure that bevacizumab would be covered, would you?
So I think bevacizumab is a good drug. I think it does work. But I don't think the evidence that we have that I showed really at this point is enough for me to tell you to use it in the untreated patient. I think we have other drugs, clearly, which have demonstrated effects. I think bevacizumab should be studied further to isolate its effects. I really do. It's just such an expensive drug. If cost were no issue, could you use it without regard and say, well, it's effective? Perhaps in that setting, you know, if we weren't dealing with $100,000 a year for this drug, which is really an issue.
And do you think the combination of these two agents is going to have double the toxicity for hypertension and that sort of thing? And there's always a potential of that, I would think.
Yes, I think it may. I mean, I think we'll end up decreasing doses of each one of these agents in order to give them together. So it's not going to be an easy situation.
I agree.
Yeah.
Dr. Dutch, what about the issue of the first line versus second line versus third line in terms of response to anti-angiogenic therapy? In breast cancer, we didn't see much effect of bevacizumab in late line, second and third line therapy, pretty prominent effect in first-line therapy. A lot of speculation about as the tumor develops more angiogenic factors. What do we know about this in renal cell cancer?
We don't know anything about it. We really don't. I mean, I think that we're at the point where we don't have other options. We're not combining it with chemotherapy. So we're going to do exactly what happened with this patient. We're going to try one and take it as long as it'll work, and then try the next one. We're going to try to develop some combination studies, whether that's going to be a better treatment or not. We just really don't know. I think it's a brave new world, and it's a lot of excitement, but I think we do not know yet how to sequence these drugs. I agree that I think we're going to see activity in serial use of these drugs. We're participating in a study of the Agaron drug following sorafenib, progression on sorafenib, and we've had 3 responses already, and it's very early in the trial. So I think that we'll be able to sequence them.
Dr. Henderson, you have a lot of experience with both of the TKIs because of your participation in the trials. What's been your observation in terms of side effects of the two comparatively?
I've got a lot more experience with sorafenib because of the number of patients I had open the expanded access trial in June of 2005 and ended up having 40 patients on the trial, as opposed to Sutent. Expanded access didn't open until about November or so. Different side effect profile. Sorafenib is more hand, foot, and rash. Sutent, you know, is more fatigue and GI side effects, I think. And I'm seeing some stomatitis and loss of taste with Sutent fairly uniformly.